are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
For anyone out there that thinks stolen bases is about speed, that Yadier Molina has 3 stolen bases. Thank you. That's all I want to say.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Prospecting on Cardinals outfielders is a lot like prospecting on Broncos running backs used to be when Shanahan was there.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I think if you look at his neck tattoo, some of us may have questions about that. Who has a worse neck tattoo? Is it Yadier Molina or Felix Hernandez?
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends with Fantasy Benefits baseball podcast. I am your host, Ben Brennis. I am joined tonight by Evan Peterson. How are you doing tonight, Evan?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm just riding the joy that was the day of your birth. Ben, welcome to manhood.
Thanks. My birthday was yesterday. I appreciate that. I do. How's your week in fantasy?
My week in fantasy was all right. It's another week. We're kind of in that middle, like, yeah, this team sucks. I efficiently am going to put a bullet in my staff league team and just kind of bury, not fully give up. I did make some pickups, but yeah, you know which ones you want to foster and which ones you're just going to viciously curb stomp. So getting to that point.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. I'm always open to a trade in the staff league if you want, so just be aware of that.
We'll see.
But we're also joined by Chuck Anderson. How are you doing tonight, Chuck?
Chuck is just fine. I spent a rare weekend away from home and my business this weekend, and so I've been furiously trying to catch up on all the fantasy baseball news I possibly can. And, of course, it led up to the weekly fab deadline that we have in the one weekly league that I have, and that turned into a complete mess, et cetera, and so forth. So it's been an interesting sort of eye roll sort of start to the season as far as I'm concerned. But I'm hoping that things will turn back to normalcy at some point where the people we thought were going to get hurt might actually get hurt versus all the people we thought would never get hurt being on the DL. So it's been an interesting season that kind of way. I guess it goes to show there's no guarantees in fantasy baseball.
Yeah, I agree. So I can be reached at bbrennisfwfb. Evan can be reached at evfwfb. And Chuck can be reached at justchucking. Send us any Twitter questions that you guys have. We're always open to answering those Twitter questions on the show. Guys, why don't we jump right in? And we're going to be talking about 3 more teams today, and then we're going to talk about some players that were drafted outside top 5 rounds that we felt we were correct on. Why don't we start with the Atlanta Braves? And Evan, I'm going to let you start us off. And what are some players on the offense that you're happy with to this point in the season? Obviously, the Freddie Freeman injury was a pretty big and devastating one, and I'm sure you need to be consoled. So I do apologize that no one on this show will do that for you. But
I am. Yeah, that's okay. All of my happy tissues for Freddie Freeman's start were replaced by sad tissues after Aaron Loop decided to be a douchebag and nail him in the wrist with a pitch. But we were talking about the weekly fab in the staff league. I was actually kind of pissed. I got outbid on Matt Adams, and I don't think that was something I was going to be saying coming into this year because I dropped him in a deep 16 team dynasty league this year, but he's not a guy you want in your lineup when a lefty's on the mound, but I guess he's okay. I mean, he's not the most interesting bat on the Braves, but since we're talking about Freddie Freeman, he's kind of the go-to here. I don't really want to see him in the outfield once Freddie comes back, and I'm just hoping the Braves kind of ship him out at the trade deadline. Regardless, I don't want to see like the defensive equivalent of a Kyle Schwarber or Yasmani Tomas out there. But I think with the way that SunTrust is playing so far this year, and you're looking at a guy who in limited playing time last year still showed a ton of pop, I think Adams is going to be an interesting play for this next month and a half, and somebody that I would be fairly speculative on as I cry myself to sleep about Freddie Freeman.
Yeah, I'm very disappointed about the Freddie Freeman injury, and I don't have him anywhere, but it's just, it's always disappointing to see a player of his caliber get knocked out, especially with how well he's been performing on the entire season.
He was an MVP candidate. He MVP free. He was batting just as good, and this isn't the way that I wanted to hit my under on Freddie Freeman's home runs, but man, he was going to blow it out of the water if he would have stayed healthy.
Yeah, I do agree on that. I mean, there are a couple of players who I like. I mean, I'm still a big Matt Kemp fan, considering that he did have a couple injury-plagued seasons, and since he's been on the Braves, he's done well. He's been a good catalyst for your offense. I do like the fact that he's hitting 351. Obviously, anyone would be happy with that, but, you know, he's not doing anything overly spectacular on the season. He's doing basically what you paid for him in terms of value. That's how I would peg it. Considering that he was just inside the top 100, he's giving you better value than that. Endern Cierta is giving you 9 steals on the season. And like you were talking about before the show, a lot of those steals came in a 1 week span, but it's still nice that he has shown some power. He has shown the speed. It would be nice if he could get that average up. But, you know, I think that will come as the season goes on. What about you, Chuck? What are your thoughts on the Braves offense?
Well, my thoughts on Matt Kemp are I'm a little disturbed that his strikeout rate is still at, you know, almost 24%. His BABIP is .418. And that seems to be what's contributing to his .386 on base percentage, which is seemingly a pretty high batting OBP for Matt Kemp in this day and age, in his age 32 season. You know, his rookie year was the same year as Ryan Braun. To give people out there a time frame, the 8 home run pace that he's on, that he has right now, I mean, I think everyone would take it. I found him kind of going later in drafts than I expected. That's why I own him on, you know, 60% of my teams. So in general, I've been very happy with Matt Kemp, but I do think that the Freddie Freeman injury will have some implications upon him, meaning that I just don't think he'll get pitched exactly the same way. I don't think he'll be in as many good situations as he was in when you had Freddie Freeman, who was ridiculous. His walk rate was almost the same as his K rate, like within 2%, 18% K guy, 16% walk rate guy. So I think there are going to be some implications from that. But as a generality, I think the Braves are a pretty nondescript team right now. I'm not all that excited about Big City, the man, you know, Matt Adams going there. Although lefties have crushed the ball in SunTrust, I still think that when he was given full-time opportunity in St. Louis, he looked pretty lousy, and I'm not altogether certain that I see much chance of a rebound from that. So, but, you know, the rest of the players, Tyler Flowers, a .452 BABIP for Tyler Flowers. I mean, I know he's outperformed and second catches are hard to come by, but I don't find that very exciting. You know, we know what Nick Markakis is. We know what Brandon Phillips can be. I just think it's a pretty nondescript offense, and the pitching is almost worse. I mean, you know, you can look for some growth from Foltynewicz. You can look for, a Colby Allard signing later in the year since he seems to be ripping up the minors. But my biggest question about the Braves now, and I wonder, from our friend Evan, who follows him so closely. I wonder if they're going to try and get pitching better and they're going to try and be competitive in years moving forward. I wonder if you think they will move the fences back or do something to try and change the airflow in that stadium. If the early results portend bad things for the rest of the season for that field, as far as run production seems to be going insane there. And almost all of their pitchers are pitching far better on the road than they are at home, especially Julio Teheran. So Teheran is at the peak of my pitching frustration because he's never had a walk rate anywhere as close to what he has now. He was leading the NL in walks quite recently. So I'm really frustrated. He's one of the players that frustrates me the most. So what do you think, Evan? Do you think they're going to change the dimensions? Do you think they'll do something to make it a more attractive place to pitch as they try to rebound and try and bolster their young arms' confidence when they get called up and maybe attract some pitchers on the free agent market?
I mean, there's something to that, and I know that SunTrust, it's playing hitter friendly. There's no other explanation for what's going on. And I know you can look at, I mean, you brought up Teheran, who, you know, he's just getting blasted at home. Like, all of his home runs are coming at SunTrust, which could just be bad grouping. Or, I mean, it could be the fact that part of park factors, and this is something that I've kind of struggled with and thinking about this for a while, is, I mean, yeah, I mean, we try and take out the other factors and just focus at as the park as the variable. But when you have a staff that is absolute dog shit like the Braves staff is, then you're going to have bad numbers no matter where the hell you're pitching at. And if it's home, which is the only thing that is really unique to you when you're looking at other teams, then I think that, yeah, SunTrust is going to play a little heavy. Park trends, you know, they vary, and there is a lot of movement of the fences, but they're not just single season based. They do take a little while to spread out. I mean, we're looking a pretty small sample size when we're talking about games of how long SunTrust has even been in existence. So I think we kind of need to slow the roll, and I think part of that is being magnified by how bad Teheran has been at home. But it's not just the home issues that he's having. He had a career batting average against right-handed hitters of .208 before 2017. They're hitting .250 off him this year. And you look at his numbers the second time he faces an order, like, you cut the splits just the second time you face a guy. Only Kyle Gibson and Matt Boyd have higher batting averages against. Another fun fact, since, you know, we're doing a little fun time with Julio Teheran, he's walked 29 of the 349 lefties he faced last year. This year he's walked 21 already. This is the worst Julio Teheran we've ever seen. Part of it is the park. Part of it is just him, and there's something that needs to get fixed here.
How do you feel about Foltynewicz, though? I am curious about that. Do you have hope for Folty to be maybe, work through some of this early season stuff? You know, the 3.74 ERA, considering SunTrust isn't terrible. You know, walk rate isn't really that bad. His strikeout rate probably seems like it should be a little better than what it is. But at the same time, you know, his FIP is 4.53, so almost a run higher than his ERA. Do you think there's hope that Mike Foltynewicz is a serviceable starter long term? And do you think his fantasy upside is that of a top 40 starter in MLB? Or do you think that's too ambitious?
Well, it's funny that you talk about his starter. If you've heard, and I know we did some previews, but you weren't on the Braves podcast. If you heard me talk about Mike Foltynewicz in the offseason, it was the gains that he made the first time through the order. Last year, he was .237 after the first time through. The previous 2 years, he was batting over .300. Again, this year, he's been phenomenal. He's got a .200 batting average the first time through the lineup. The second time, or after he faces a lineup the first time, I was looking at the leaderboards. He's got like the 15th highest OBP in the majors. He's having trouble flipping the lineup a second time. So me and Matt were talking about him becoming a long relief guy. Like, I hate using the Chris Davinsky thing or the Mike Minor topic from last time, but I think that's going to be a role that you may see him in 2 to 3 years. And if you're in a dynasty league with Foltynewicz, I'd be selling as much as I possibly could.
I do like that we were able to bring up Foltynewicz, because I've always been under the impression that within the next year or so, they're going to contemplate making Foltynewicz their closer. So do you think that that is something that could actually end up happening? And because if they do trade, let's say they do trade Jim Johnson away within the next year, is there someone that you reasonably think that is actually going to come in and replace? Because I don't know if they really see Vizcaino as an actual closer anymore, or if they see Mauricio Cabrera. So do you think that Foltynewicz is someone who would be a potential closer, Evan?
Ramirez is the other guy that you threw out that I kind of like as a dark horse. But no, I think because Folty kind of has the ability to go multiple innings, I think he would be the infinity times better version of Josh Colemantor, of somebody that if they needed multiple innings that they could go to. But I just don't see that role for the Braves. I don't think, and it's like me and Matt joked about, his role is going to be a long relief guy for the third or fourth team he's on. It's not going to be with the Braves, I don't think.
Fair enough. What are your thoughts on Jim Johnson at this point during the season? Because I know that you weren't as high in him as Chuck was to start the season. So what are your thoughts on Jim Johnson?
I mean, he's getting it done, but Chuck, what was it, 27 and a half saves was the bet?
It was.
27 and a half, and he's at 8, so you're looking, I mean, that's over the first 2 months, multiply it by 3 to get a 6-month season. He's fallen right under, but, I mean, there's definitely room for improvement. Now, part of that was baked in to the fact that the Braves pitching staff wasn't going to be very good, and like we've kind of went over, it's not, but I mean... Johnson's been decent, and you were saying that he's one of three Braves pitchers that, or at least, you know, kind of qualified Braves pitchers with a K per nine over 9. Their entire staff was, you know, 6.5. I think one guy was over 7. I don't have him right in front of me right now. They're bad right now. And if I know Tyler Flowers was supposed to be like a defensive upgrade over what they've had. Flowers has been actually pretty good since he became a Brave. Since he joined Atlanta, he's hitting .301 against right-handed pitching. And before that, he had a .224. His OPS is like 200 points better. Not that you want him anywhere near your lineup when there's a leftier mound or if it's just a one-catcher league, but I think in deeper two catchers, it's somebody you could kind of kick the tires on.
Yeah, I do agree with that. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Jim Johnson at this point during the season? Are you as happy with him as what your expectations coming into the season were?
Well, you know, he's the one closer that I drafted out of all my closers who really has pitched fairly well and has not really been threatened with losing the job. Oddly enough, he's the one Brave pitcher amongst their pitching leaders that has a much lower FIP than he does ERA. His ERA is 3.00, which I think most people would have taken, given sort of the rocky history that he had before last year, you know. And then, but his FIP is 2.15, you know. So he's actually gotten a little bit unlucky. So I feel good about that. I think 27.5% for a strikeout percentage is awfully good, and well below 5% for a walk rate is pretty good as well. I mean, I do feel like he's holding up his end of the bargain. I think the rest of the team has been pretty disappointing outside of Kemp and Freeman is sort of how I see it. I mean, I know Flowers has sort of outplayed what people thought he was going to do. But I think the rest of the pitching staff is holding back Jim Johnson's numbers. And there's been so much turmoil amongst closers, especially, you know, once you get to the middle and bottom tier, that I think everyone who drafted Jim Johnson is probably pretty happy with him. And although I think it's probably a toss-up if he gets to 27.5 saves, if he pitches like this for the whole year, I think kind of my point will be made regardless. You know, 57% ground ball rate is awfully good as well. So there's a lot to like about Jim Johnson right now, and I'm holding firm on the fact that he was a really good low end closer buy.
Yeah, I do think that fantasy owners would be very happy if he doesn't get traded and he stays on the Braves the entire year and he's able to put up numbers similar to what he has now extrapolated over the rest of the season, maybe get the ERA a little bit lower. It's nice to see him actually have a K per nine. It's nice to see him have a good low whip. it's nice to see that he has 8 saves, given the fact that the Braves pitching staff has not been that good. So I do think that fantasy owners that do own him are pretty happy with the performance that he has given them this year.
Yeah, and the one thing about the Braves pitching staff being as bad as it was, and we were kind of talking about this prior to firing up the mics, is this, where the heart of their farm system is that the Braves would pretty much trade for your firstborn child if he was left-handed. And their pitching staff down in the minors, I mean, outside of Colby Allard, like, I think Lucas Sims has probably been the best, other than, like, Sean Newcomb probably would get the first sniff. But, like, I know I was pimping Max pretty hard because he was on the 40-man, and I figured he would get some run. I just don't know that there's a ton of reinforcements, and the reinforcements are definitely not Aaron Blair or Matt Wessler. So,
I agree with that. Why don't we move on over to the Cardinals, and I will let Chuck start with one of his players that he thinks has had a really good season so far.
Well, it's hard not to mention Mike Leake, as far as a Cardinal who has definitely played very, very well. I was the first one to not have any belief in Mike Leake and think that the wheels are going to fall off permanently here very soon. So I'm curious if there's any feeling like this could be sort of a renaissance season for him. He was a guy who definitely he disappointed in his first year of a contract, but it seems sometimes like guys bounce back from this. Like they, they put maybe a little too much pressure on themselves originally when they get the new contract, and then sometimes they relax a little bit more over time and pitch quite a bit better. And this is definitely a very good version of Mike Leake that we're seeing. His FIP is 3.19, which is not terrible. I mean, I know it's significantly higher than his 2.03, but considering the investment cost originally in Mike Leake, it's hard to imagine anyone wouldn't live with a 3.19 FIP, regardless of if he was a little above that or a little below that. His left on base percentage of 86.5% really jumps off the page at me. So there's some issues there. And he's, giving up 0.68 home runs per nine is really low as well. So I'm just curious as to if you needed someone like this on your staff, if you would be willing to invest in Mike Leake the rest of the season. What do you think, Ben? Would you be willing to invest in Mike Leake?
I mean, I'm not a big fan of Mike Leake, but I do think that he's having a much better season than I would have expected. But his ERA is a full run, even it's actually more than a run lower than his FIP. His xFIP is a whole run and a half more than what his ERA is. His BABIP is low. His left on base is very high, and he's just not striking out a ton of people. So I think that while I am enjoying his success, I think I'd actually look to move him if I owned him, only for the fact that I'm not overly happy with what the K rate is and where the peripheral numbers are potentially heading. I think that it's almost easier to kind of move him for the value that he's giving you right now, maybe even a little less, and try to get someone who is potentially going to bounce back the second half of the season. What are your thoughts on Mike Leake, Evan?
I mean, I realize he's having a really good season. We were joking about playing, is Mike Leake good? I don't know how much other people have bought into it necessarily. So if you're shopping him, I don't know how much you're going to get for him. But if you're saying, would I go out and invest in Mike Leake? I mean, why not? He's actually had a kind of, you want to talk about a renaissance, and you look at the .297 batting average against that right-hander bashed him for against last year, and he's knocked it down to a .202 this year. There's a lot of, I think Mike Leake is kind of a smart guy. Like, I mean, I hate to like throw it out there that like some people are just not going to figure it out at some point in time. But I think, you know, even if Leak never fully realizes a K potential that makes us go nuts, I think he has the ability to become a pitcher that, you know, the ratios and kind of the peripherals make him worth investing in. So yeah, I pin some hopes and dreams on him this season. Not huge hopes and dreams, but I would definitely go out and invest in them.
Well, the four wins is kind of is pretty underwhelming considering you know, it is 2.03 ERA. But, you know, the rest of most of his peripherals fall in line except the BABIP of 244 is.
Yeah, he's got four real quick. He's got four wins, but all of his starts have been quality. So,
yeah. So he's been gold in a quality start league for what that's worth. And so he's an interesting guy because I thought the season was going to fall apart on him by now. And it hasn't. I want to say that his last start was not that good, which is something I'm checking on right now. But
against Boston?
Yeah, his Boston start was acceptable as well. So yeah. What are you going to do? The other person that really caught my eye is Dexter Fowler, somebody I've really been wondering about this year. I think Cardinals really rejoiced when they signed him because they thought he was going to be this, you know, 350-plus OBP guy because that's what he is, et cetera, and so forth. And here he is with, you know, a very underwhelming, you know, a very underwhelming on base percentage. You know, 318 is certainly not great, and also you know, he's battled some injuries, which is something that he did a little bit last year with the Cubs and quite a bit when he was in Colorado. I always thought of him as a not very consistent player, but you know, he did have two good seasons in a row, which got him this contract. So I wonder if your thoughts have changed much on Dexter Fowler, and do you think that Dexter Fowler was overdrafted to start the season? What do you think, Ben? You think Fowler was overdrafted?
I do. I'm not a big Dexter Fowler fan. I actually own him in a couple of dynasty leagues, and I was looking to move him this offseason because I thought a lot of people would like where his value is headed, but I was not a big fan of him coming into the season. I think that they have other good pieces there that if he gets hurt, they have no issues not rushing him back. I didn't think that he was going to have a ton of stolen bases, and he's only got one for the year. He's not hitting well. He's hitting .220. If he wasn't hitting six home runs right now, I think if he was like at two home runs, we probably would be in the discussion of saying that he's probably only owned in like 30% of leagues as opposed to 60. So I'm not a big fan of Dexter Fowler, and I think that there's a lot of room for him to improve. But he's got to do it really quick for fantasy owners to be happy with the potential return that they're going to get from him over the next month and a half. What about you, Evan?
I mean, he's still, like, if you look at things like ISO, and I mean, I know that's kind of floated by his three triples and the six home runs, which and this may sound like a stupid question, but do Zips and Steamer update throughout the season, or this 10 that I'm looking at is what he was projected at the beginning of the season, correct?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, so he's going to blow past that, and I think most people would say that if Dexter Fowler hits you 15 home runs and manages to steal 15 bases, like, that's kind of what you were looking for. And the thing that's not coming around is the steals, which I hate to just point at BABIP and say, hey, he's got a .245 BABIP, and that might have something to do that if that shot up 45 points or something like that, then you're looking at a guy with a .360 on base who probably has more than one steal attempt on the year. Now, whether or not they're successful or not is a completely different situation, but I think the one thing you were looking at was for a little more speed at least, and I think he kind of had the injury where he was pinch hitting and still doing some things. Past couple games, he doesn't have a hit, but I think a Fowler turnaround is on the horizon. I don't think there's been a huge change in his overall skill set or anything like that. I think it's just a cold spell at the plate for him.
I'd just like to mention that his 23 runs and his 18 RBIs, I think anybody who drafted Fowler would be pretty excited with those numbers at this point of the season, as he's on pace to do better, much better than he did last year, as far as projecting it out to a full season. So that's pretty exciting. I think one of the
and that's with him hitting terribly.
Yeah, and it's a big one of the big differences is you know, the walk rate is down significantly over you know, what it, where it was, where it has been. You know, a couple years ago. So I do think it's going to be kind of interesting to see how this all plays out, because the Cardinals, you know, people were really down on them for a while to start the season, and now they've sort of stormed back, and, you know, they're actually in first place in the Central since my Brewers are a mirage. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, but I think he's a guy that might play himself into being a very good draft value next year. Those are sort of my thoughts on Dexter Fowler now. So,
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Lance Lynn, concerning that he's come back from injury?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind when I think about Lance Lynn is that I basically decided that I was going to invest in Waka over Lance Lynn this year, which is a decision that doesn't look especially good right now. But I think about guys like Lance Lynn when we're discussing other players. You know, when you're talking about Foltynewicz, and, you know, it seems like you know, usually guys struggle to get deep into games because they don't have a good three-pitch mix. And I had consistently heard that Lance Lynn did not have a very good mix of pitches, not enough pitches to, you know, conceivably be as good of a pitcher as he's turned out to be so far this year. So I'm a little bit concerned. I still think I think that this division, the NL Central, has turned out to be a pretty tough division to pitch in, as far as, you know, the Reds are better than expected. I saw Scott Schebler hit his 13th home run tonight. You know, the Brewers are a really hard place team to pitch against in their home park, for sure, but anywhere overall, they've been a top five offense this year, to say the least. And so I worry a little bit about regression and wear and tear on a guy who is not known for pitching deep into seasons and is coming off, you know, a season where he basically didn't pitch at all. So, you know, I'm guardedly optimistic about Lance Lynn, but I am curious as to what Evan thinks. Evan, are you a Lance Lynn guy?
Well, I'm a Lance Lynn guy because I've been saying, oh yeah, totally pick him up, awesome. But the right-handed splits of his 159 BABIP against and the 130 batting average against are, like, howling regression. And I think now would be the time. Like, I'm cool to say I pimp Lance Lynn for as long as I could, but now it's time to move him for what he can, treat him like a stock, sell high, and kind of cash out right now, because you've squeezed the juice from Lance Lynn, if you will. I think anyways, but I don't think Waka is a bad choice. Like, I think the bet that you made of Waka being better at the end of the season on the player rater, like, it, I mean, it was still a good bet, and it fosters a lot of, you know, good talk for us, but I think you will probably end up being right on that one, and I don't think you should just be like, oh, I picked wrong on Waka.
I like the skill set a little bit better with Waka, but so far the results have been a little bit better for Lance Lynn, and Waka's been a little dinged up. So, what about you, Ben? Where are your thoughts on?
I think that they're both doing very good this year, and I was not a Waka person coming in, and I was trying to buy in on Lance Lynn because he had a lot of time to be able to come back. He could have come back for the postseason run last year. They could have brought him back in September, but they chose not to. They chose to keep resting him. It allowed him to build up his arm strength. It allowed him to go through the entire season at a regular throwing program. So when he came into spring training, there wasn't a lot of rust in him because he was able to actually go and he was able to do the program regularly, as opposed to people who come back from Tommy John and have to go through a throwing program through the very first part of spring training, typically. So I was trying to buy on him because of that. I think he's looked pretty good so far. I do think that there will be some regression as the year goes on, because that does happen when you've taken a year plus off, and that there's going to be some tired part of the season for you. Your arm is just going to go into the dead arm phase. And at some point, he's just going to get fatigued. So I do think that while he has a good run now, you could look to potentially trade him. Michael Walker's had a very good season to this point, and I think if he's able to keep it up, then he's going to be one of the better draft day targets, considering that he was taken at, on average, at 221 in ESPN. I do think that he's giving you great value at this point.
Yeah. Oh no! Real quick, I just wanted to steal your job and kind of shift the conversation to where I think it's going to go next, because we haven't talked about him yet. Chuck, did you want to talk about Jed Jerko, who, since he has taken over the cleanup spot since your birthday, he's got the exact same batting average as Aaron Judge and Nelson Cruz over that time? I think that's pretty good for a guy that was mainly left for dead at a lot of draft tables, I bet.
Yeah, he's one of my drafting success stories late in drafts this year. I own him in 60% of the leagues that I'm in, and I'm very happy with the power production. And there was obviously some concern early on in the season when they seemed to be trying to play Colton Wong and trying to play Johnny Peralta, but I don't think that that's going to be a problem moving forward. My hope now is that he's going to figure out a way to keep a bunch of multi-position eligibility. And in leagues where I got him cheap, I think I'm going to sort of use him as a cheap building block for power next year, because I think he's played his way into the long-term plans as far as the Cardinals are concerned. So I'm very, very high on Jerko. I know seems like he's probably unlikely to get shortstop eligibility for next year. But if I could get a combination of third and second and maybe sneak in first base, I think I would be happy to use him as a building block for power for seasons to come. I think he's played himself into the future plans. Are you as high on Jerko going forward as I am, Ben?
I'm a pretty big Jed Jerko fan, and I hadn't been until I kind of started to do more research. I really thought that he was the type of player that was just exceeding his expectations. And when I've done some more research, I've realized that he's actually performed pretty well, and that I think that is something he's able to keep up. I don't think he's going to keep hitting 300 plus for the rest of the season, but I do think that he is able to at least finish with a 280 to 290 average, which will still be good. I do think that he could end up finishing with around 5 or so stolen bases. And if he gets to 20-plus home runs again, then you're getting a lot of good value, considering that you didn't really think that you were going to probably draft him, and now he's potentially a starter for you in a lot of different size leagues. But anyone who you draft outside of pick 200 and is now starting for you, and probably will be for the remainder of the season, that's a pretty good buy. What are your thoughts, Evan?
I like Jerko. There's not much else to add to everything you guys just threw out there. I like him, and like Chuck was saying, that as a building block for dynasties moving forward, it's a fantastic call, because I mean, Colton Wong's hitting well as far as his average is concerned, but as far as kind of everything else, it's I don't know. Nothing too exciting, and I think Jerko's a much better player, and hopefully the Cardinals kind of realize that.
If I was gonna wave a caution flag about Jerko, I don't really like that his walk rate is down almost 2%, but his OBP is up, you know, from 306 to 380 this year. That kind of scares me, and I know that's a little bit BABIP driven. Now, he is the kind of guy who drives the ball hard, you know, hits the ball hard around the yard. But he's not a big speed guy that you would expect to have an overly high BABIP. And for what it's worth, as high as I am on Jerko, I would take the under on 280 for his final batting average. I think it's probably going to end up closer to 265 to 270. But at the same time, return on investment, as we've spoke of, return on investment was pretty great on Jerko this year, even if he turns out to be more like a 250 hitter the rest of the year than the 300-plus guy we've seen so far.
Evan, are there any other hitters on the Cardinals that you're a fan of?
That I'm a fan. Like, I mean, I like Yadier Molina as like a person, but not a fantasy fan of. I don't really think so. Tommy Pham's been lighting stuff up.
Anything that didn't get
anybody excited. Nobody got excited about Tommy Pham, who I'm struggling to pull up his numbers right now. He's been waxing ass, as far as I remember.
Yeah, he's done a good job, but do you really think that once Piscotty is back and Fowler's back that he's going to be getting a ton of playing time? He'd probably end up eating into Grichuk's playing time, so I'm not really sure if the Cardinals really want to do that right now.
Well, if there's anything I've learned about baseball in the past 2 months, is that there's probably a DL stint for somebody right around the corner. So who knows how it's going to play itself out. And just because you're worried about, you know, what may happen when guys come back, this is the year when, you know, you can't really write any of that in stone.
I just want to mention that for anyone out there that thinks stolen bases is about speed, that Yadier Molina has 3 stolen bases. Thank you. That's all I want to say. 3 stolen bases, I mean, that'll tell you that a player who's smart, you know, can steal bases. And obviously, he knows more about the running game than just about anyone. But it's been sort of an interesting statistical year for Yadier Molina because his strikeout rate has jumped and his walk rate has gotten worse. But, you know, he chipped in for 3 steals, which is what you could have expected for a season total. So if he got to 6 or 7 steals, can you imagine how much that would affect his rating on the player radar by the end of the season at a position like catcher when, I don't think anyone was putting him in the running to have the most stolen bases at that position. So I think that's kind of interesting. I don't like prospecting on Cardinals outfielders is a lot like prospecting on Broncos running backs used to be when Shanahan was there. It just seems like, unless you're just doing the mainstays, it seems like it's a really dangerous game to play because they seem to be exceptionally deep there and they seem to be willing to sit guys. So I'm out on Tommy Pham and his friend Sergio Magnieris or whatever his name is. I'm out on those guys.
Magnieris.
Hey, I was close.
But he's back. He's back down in the minors, and he'll probably come up later in the year anyway. So that doesn't really matter.
See, like a week ago, I had people in chat rooms, etc., that were pretty excited about, about the other outfielder, and that already didn't happen. And Piscotty took the day off on Sunday, but I believe he played on Saturday. I think time's going to be hard to come by for Tommy Pham, who's, you know, a career quadruple A sort of fourth or fifth outfielder until he gets moved off the Cardinals roster to me.
Yeah. Hey, can I have an ADD moment real quick? You were saying Yadier Molina is smart. I think if you look at his neck tattoo, some of us may have questions about that. Who has a worse neck tattoo? Is it Yadier Molina or Felix Hernandez? It would have been fine if they like had these coming into it, but these are like mid-career tattoo decisions.
I can't really answer as a Brewer fan. I can't really answer questions about Yadier Molina objectively.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, we've despised him for so long. He's one of those guys that you love to have on your team, but you hate to have to play against, especially a team that tries to run like the Brewers, you know, that doesn't work out well for Yadier Molina. But I've distinctly thought that just sort of the body shape and the uniforms and stuff shows off that neck tattoo a lot more for Yadier Molina, and I find that one more annoying than Felix Hernandez, who I realize is making close to $28 million this year. So I wonder how Seattle fans feel about that. But anyway, I will vote against the Yadier Molina tattoo. I think that's the worst one of the two.
So why don't we move into the next topic? And we're going to talk about the Texas Rangers. Evan, what are your thoughts on Elvis Andrews this year? Because so far, he is leading the Rangers on player radar, and it seems that he's done a pretty good job being able to fill in as a regular shortstop as opposed to maybe a middle infield, which people probably drafted him as.
Is that really true that he's the best player raider for the Rangers?
Of all the hitters, yes. He's ahead of Joey Gallo by about 0.2 points.
Okay. Well, my questions would be, do you believe in the home run pace, which he's hit 5 and he's never hit double digits? Do you believe in the steals have been fantastic, but do you think he's going to hit 30, or most projection systems had him at 20? I think he's been good, but there's nothing in his profile that makes me like desire Elvis Andrews. I don't know what that is. And that really, like, I understand a lot of these other guys have been slumping, you know, like Nomar Mazar has come on as of late. Luke Roy took a while to get started, things like that. But no, on Elvis Andrews, and I wish he would have started anywhere else.
What about you, Chuck? What are your thoughts on Elvis Andrews?
Quite a bit opposite of Evans. I thought his year was pretty solid last year. I know he didn't, he didn't. His over 300 average last year was a welcome sight. He's traded a little average for a little extra pop this year. His strikeout rate is up like 3.5%. I think that people sort of gave up on him too early. He's a guy who got called up really early, like when he was 21 or 22 years old. And now he's a 27-year-old player, and he's experienced. And the ESPN analysts on Sunday night announced him as the best overall Ranger hitter of 2017 to this point, and he really looks like it. I really love that he's moved up in the lineup. I think that really has a tendency to help his numbers. I mean, you know, he's on pace to have really career year in runs scored and RBIs. And I don't think I would take the under on 20 home runs, obviously. I think he finishes more in the neighborhood of, you know, somewhere between 13 and 16 home runs. But I don't think that's what you drafted him for. I think Elvis Andrus, if you waited on shortstop and, you know, you drafted Andrus and coupled him with someone else, hoping one of the two would step up for you, I think Elvis Andrus has really helped a lot of fantasy teams. And I'm an Elvis Andrus fan at this point. You know, you take him in that American League. You take him in that American League stadium in the middle of the summer. He's also is underrated for how durable he's been. I mean, you look, 147 games last year, 160, I'm going backwards, 157, 156, 158, 150, 148, 145. You know, that's going all the way back down to 2009. So in this day and age, when the 10-day DL has gone crazy, etc., I think a track record of durability adds to the value of a guy as well. He's not a flashy guy, I get that, but he's underrated and very, very solid at this point to me.
We've been using the word revolution a lot, and it's talked about a number of, you know, we're talking about the fly ball revolution or the pulled ball revolution, which is where I think Elvis Andrus is finding this power. If you take a look at kind of his pull numbers and the fly balls that he's generating, like he had a 12% fly ball rate before 2016, which is insanely low this year. I believe it was 28.5%. I mean, you're just looking at crazy numbers for Andrus. And like you said, the power isn't something you drafted him for. But I think a lot of it does have to do with the slow starts of, you know, somebody that I don't know if Ben was on the line or if he was choking on a peanut or something like that. But we were talking about Odor's start to the season and how slow he's been. I mean, if you kind of want to jump there, or like anybody else on this team, they all kind of sucked for one part of the season.
Yeah, I was going to go to the direction of to Jonathan Lucroy, who people had drafted pretty early thinking that he was going to be a bona fide catcher after a season he had last year, and he has relatively been disappointing. Other than hitting about 373 in the month of May, he really hasn't done a ton else throughout the entire season. So what are your thoughts on him, Evan?
Lucroy, I think that he's somebody that is kind of, you know, like I said, on the swing up. I think, like you mentioned, the .357 batting average in May. He's been, you know, he hit two home runs this month. Like, we're looking at arbitrary endpoints by month, but he's just been a lot better as far as his strikeout percentage. He's striking out less. He's walking more. It's just a better approach at the plate for him. And he's not a, you know, .206 batting average guy that he was in March, you know, with a .528 OPS. That's not his game. You know, he's going to get much better. And Lucroy, if you're looking for somebody to invest in at catcher, you may still get some people that look at the overall season numbers and discount him. But I do think it's a buying opportunity, like you were talking about things heating up down in Arlington.
What are your thoughts on Jonathan Lucroy, Chuck?
Well, I've obviously seen his career blossom from being a Brewer fan for a long time. And I can tell you that this is not his first slow start. And when I look at a guy now, we're at the quarter pole of the season. He's got 9 runs and 12 RBIs. I'm not trying to pretend that he's going to stay on this kind of pace, but I am saying that that limits his upside when you take a quarter of the season and you're talking about a guy who was taken as the second catcher off the board on a number across a number of different formats. And I screamed to the hills that I did not think that Jonathan Lucroy was that type of player. We're still talking about a guy who's hit more than 20 home runs once in his entire career. And, you know, he was renowned for he had a huge double season 1 year, et cetera, and so forth. And I think he's an overachieving kind of guy, and I like him. I think I see some concern. You know, his walk rate is still under 5% for the year, which is, you know, not a traditional thing. And this is his walk year, so this is the year where he's trying to build up the value the most, and maybe he's putting a little extra pressure on himself. I don't know everything that's going on. I mean, I have seen him hit the ball very hard over the last week, and I know that he's going to turn around, you know, how he started, and he's going to be a better player than this. But I wonder if he can recover all the way across the board numbers wise. And I still am a strong believer that drafting catching early is a foolhardy mission in general that I really strongly stay away from. So it's not that I disagree with Evan. I do think he's going to recover, and he's a good hitter. And if you could get him now when you got the slow start behind him, there's a lot of extra value there. But I'm not going to be aboard Team Lucroy as somebody that I can target in drafts in the coming years, because he goes too early for what you can get out of a guy who's got to sit once a week most of the time, and a guy who's never going to be a huge power guy, and obviously you're not going to get a lot of steals from him either. So that's where I am on Lucroy.
It's funny that you say you've seen him hit a bunch of hard hit balls over the past 2 weeks, because would you like to take a guess what his hard hit percentage is this season? I don't know if you're looking at those numbers right now or not.
I am not. I'm on a different page.
Okay. Ben, or would you like to take a guess? Or
I would say anything over 30 or 31% would surprise me.
Ben?
21%.
Well, 21% would be really low considering the past. Dang it, I just lost his page in my clusterfuck of things going on. He's got a 26% hard hit rate, which is, you know, he's never been below 34% over the past like 4 or 5 years. So I think, once again, you're saying anecdotally, you've seen him hit well over the past, you know, couple of weeks. Like I said, the season-long numbers are still depressed, and I think there is room for those to kind of get bolstered up. And like you were talking about, the runs and the RBI numbers, like the rest of this team has been scoffed, you know, like I said, Odor or whoever else you want to talk about is not hitting very well. Not hitting very well.
Why don't we move over to the pitching side of things? Chuck, what are your thoughts on Matt Busch?
Well, I'm heavily invested because he needed to be my backup plan in a number of different spots. And overall, it seems like he's been pretty solid. I saw on Sunday night that Keona Kayla came in for the save, I believe, which, you know, greatly concerned me because I don't want to see any sort of revolution happen like that. Matt Bush is a guy who's got a very ugly history. You never want to look up anything about his past indiscretions because I remember very clearly Keith Law stating that Matt Bush is a guy that should have been banned from ever playing Major League Baseball. But he appears to have leveled himself off and has behaved pretty well. But, you know, in dynasty leagues and stuff like that, I would probably factor in a little bit of possibility of him having a recurrence of his pretty morbid criminal history. But, you know, the numbers for Matt Bush were really, really, really good last year. And, you know, this year he's, you know, he's the 11.5 Ks per nine you have to be pretty excited about. His walk rate has come up a little bit so far this year as well. I would like to see him start racking up saves. And, you know, as we've noted, when Adrian Beltre gets back and everybody starts hitting a little bit closer to what we thought they were, I think he's a good candidate long-term to keep the job because I certainly – Dyson has pitched a lot better, and Dyson is back in the eighth inning role. And the only caution I have about Matt Bush, the only fear in the back of my head, is that since Dyson got back from his – DL stint, he's been pretty good. So I don't know if they have any desire to go back, but there's definitely, I think it's back to the point where Dyson is breathing down his neck if he was to have a bad couple of weeks. So that would sort of be my only concern. He's got the stuff to be a closer, and you know, in this closer environment, he's somebody that a lot of people just have to lean on because a lot of other situations have blown up. That's sort of where I am on Matt Bush.
What about you, Evan?
I think it's funny that you want to talk about his potential for recidivism of committing crimes again and not like him being 31 or like the skills eroding or anything like that. I think part of this may have to do with how the Rangers are faring in the division race, which there's a lot of blah in the AL West. They are 5.5 games back of the Astros right now, who I think are just light years ahead of them as far away as talent. And I don't know when you're looking up at the trade deadline if the Rangers really think that they might be in play for a wild card spot. I think the rest of the pitching is kind of disgusting on this team, the starting pitching anyways. But I like Matt Bush for the rest of the season, and I'm not a huge Sam Dyson guy. And if we're talking this year and not looking at his, you know, tendency to commit crimes again, then I think he should be just fine.
And what are your thoughts on Cole Hamels when he comes back from the DL? Do you think that he's going to be able to come back to anything of what he's been for the last few years, or do you think that this is someone that you're looking to avoid no matter what happens, Evan?
I like Hamels. I think he's it'd be an interesting buy-in, especially in this pitching landscape where it is right now. If somebody wants to give me Cole Hamels on a discount, I'll roll the bones on him. Why not?
So you have no issues that through the season right now that he's gone 32 innings with only 15 strikeouts. That doesn't bother you whatsoever?
No, it bothers me, but it's five games, and I think it's something that could be remedied. I mean, I don't know why that necessarily has to be what he is, and I know Chuck's going to come in and talk about the previous workload and, you know, everything else under the sun, but it's a gamble that I'm willing to take given the pitching landscape right now.
I mean, I can agree with that. I don't think that the work that he's put on his arm and everything over the last few years is necessarily a negative for him because he has been as consistent as you can be when you try to get someone when you need to get 200 innings. But last year he did have a surprisingly high amount of walks and his whip was pretty high last year considering. And, you know, you can easily chalk that up to being in a tough division in the AL West and playing in Arlington and everything. But this year, all of a sudden the strikeouts just kind of seemed to disappear. And I don't know. For me, it felt like that it was someone that I would rather avoid if I could, rather than look to buy, just for the fact that he has been so consistent. And this year, like I said, it just kind of fell off. What are your thoughts, Chuck?
I think I've detected a peripherals flip in Cole Hamels in recent years. And I was never a fan of the switch from the NL East to the AL West, just with the extra hitter and just having to face the Astros, et cetera, playing in Texas in the middle of the summer, even though he's a, you know, he's a Southern boy. So supposedly it was a team that he always wanted to go to, et cetera, and so forth. You know, I just, when I say a peripheral flip, when you look at his FIP, for years, his ERA was really good, and his, you know, his FIP and his peripheral stats supported it. Last year, his ERA was relatively good, and his ERA flipped all the way around to where it said, boy, he probably shouldn't have been that good. And now this year, so far, we've had a 3.03 ERA and a 5.18 FIP, a 5.26 XFIP. It's just, it's the kind of gamble that doesn't make good sense to me on paper. But so far this year, I've been so frustrated by pitching that, you know, gambles like, you know, Clayton Richard and gambles like Trevor Cahill and, you know, gambles like Derek Holland after years of inactivity, et cetera, seem to be paying off. So I'm not going to completely denounce and say that, you know, that he's not worth a flyer if you need to catch lightning in a bottle. I just think he's somebody that you need to be very cautious of in general going forward. In this pitching environment, you're going to have to take some gambles, especially if you need to acquire pitching. So I'm not going to hold it against anyone if they hope that Cole Hamels, you know, takes a little break and he comes back fresh and he's closer to what we expect of him to be. I mean, I never thought 4.13 Ks per nine. I never thought he was going to be that bad. And he really hasn't cut his walk rate much from last year, which was a bad walk rate for him as well. So there's caution signs, but was he hurt to start the year? Well, last year wasn't great either. But like I said, I mean, I don't even know what to do anymore when, you know, when it started with Mad Bum and it's just gone downhill for guys that we thought we knew about, and they're just not there yet. You know, they just haven't been there for us. And so, you know, Cole Hamels. If you want to take a gamble on it, go ahead. But I wouldn't gamble on longer than the rest of this year. An interesting Cole Hamels tidbit. I've always been bitter about Cole Hamels because I owned him as a minor leaguer, and I dropped him after he got into a bar fight and broke his pitching hand. Do you remember this? So anyway, I thought to myself, this kid has got to be an idiot. Like, I thought of Nuke LaLoosh from, you know, from
Bull Durham.
From Bull Durham, because I'm thinking, what kind of a moron is like a top 25 or 30 prospect in the bigs and gets into a fight and breaks his pitching hand? So, but anyway, I regress. It was my Evan moment.
Was your Evan moment right there?
Why don't we move into the next section that we're going to be talking about? And we're going to start with Chuck. Chuck, why don't you tell us about the player that you've drafted that was outside of the first five rounds that you felt you were the most right on?
Well, it started way back. I'm in a three-sport league that drafts, you know, way before the baseball season starts, because it drafts before football and basketball start, you know, the previous year. And I was in disbelief that Marco Estrada just kept lasting and lasting and lasting. And so I took Marco Estrada thinking that, boy, if this is really my last pitcher, is Marco Estrada, my team is going to be really, really good. And he didn't get a lot of love in the preseason. And here now he has, you know, his highest K per nine rate ever. He's been mostly solid, had a couple bad starts here and there. He's also survived this horrendous, what was our horrendous start for Toronto, and now Toronto is playing better. I think Marco Estrada is a wonderful guy to have invested in. And I think maybe now, as he creates more and more believers as the season goes on, maybe you have some extra value on your roster if you decide you want to, you know, try and upgrade somewhere else. And I think people are going to change their mind about Estrada the longer this goes on. I mean, this has been year after year after year. And ironically, the most ironic thing about Estrada right now is we've noted that he's got like the lowest BABIP of any pitcher over the last 3 years. But this year, the BABIP against him is 290. So it's jumped up significantly, like 56 or 60 points higher than he has been over the last 3 years as a whole. And he's still been really, really good. So I think Estrada next year, conceivably, if he continues, does most of the year at this pace, and with all of the casualties we've seen in the pitching ranks, I think we could be talking about Marco Estrada next year as a top 25 pitcher.
What are your thoughts on Estrada, Evan?
Well, Chuck took my trivia, so fuck you. But the one thing that, you know, we're talking about all these BABIP and kind of stat things that influence Marco Estrada. The other reason that a lot of people may not particularly buy fully into him is that in 2015, the first year that he came over to the Blue Jays, I'm pretty sure he was the league leader in FIP minus ERA. So he just beat the crap out of his FIP and was probably one of, you know, considered one of the luckiest pitchers. And, you know, people talk about pitching in the AL East and how terrible it is and all this other crap. And yeah, he does have home run issues, but he's always kind of been a sabermetric darling. And I don't know, once again, and I know we've said this about other guys, but has the public perception of Estrada caught up? And maybe now that his BABIP is 290, you know, this year, and he still, you know, has an ERA that's under 3.5. I think it's a very interesting kind of exercise in public perception of Estrada. Ben, do you agree? Or
I do. I've been a big Estrada fan for the last, I'd say, two and a half seasons. I was a big fan of when he actually moved to the Blue Jays, and it's kind of surprising, but I did think that he was a good enough pitcher that he'd be able to get enough strikeouts to still be relevant, that I thought he'd keep his ERA and his WHIP low. He gets enough ground balls that it's able to keep his BABIP low, which will help in all of the aspects of pitching. And I thought that the team was good enough to get him a bunch of wins. Now, obviously, this year the offense has regressed significantly with the loss of Encarnacion and Donaldson being on the DL and Bautista not being the Jose Bautista of a couple years ago, but he's still doing a very good job. As you can see, he's got 70 Ks through 62.2 innings. It's his highest K per nine of his entire career since he basically came up into the bigs and was a mainstay. And I just think that he's done a very good job, and I expect him to be able to keep up potential top 25 status for the rest of the season.
I just want to mention one more thing about Estrada. Some of the irony about how he's performed this year is part of the reason that I really liked him is there's this this revolution of velocity that we see around Major League Baseball, that all these pitchers are throwing hard, and one by one, the highest velocity pitchers are going down. You know, the Noah Syndergaards, the Garrett Richards, the, you know, everybody who throws hard, they're getting hurt. Matt Harvey of a couple years ago, et cetera, and so forth. And Marco Estrada is a guy who pitches backwards. Everybody who goes up to the plate against him knows that he's got one of the most ridiculous changeups in the game, and he will throw it as a 3-0 pitch. He'll throw it as an 0-0 pitch. He'll throw it when he's behind, when he's ahead. And part of my idea was, you know, well, this is a guy that you can expect to be relatively durable because he's not up there with that high effort, 95 plus kind of velocity. And so this 10.05 K per nine is sort of taking me aback. And, you know, it doesn't look like, there's not a huge velocity difference between where he's been in recent years. So that's not what it is. But I never expected his K rate to jump like this. So, I do think is going to regress a little bit over time. But at the same time, my point is still intact that over time you're going to see sort of a reversion back to some of these guys who can be counted on to be a little healthier because they're not, you know, they're not the high velocity guys. And I was maybe a little bit ahead of that. And Marco Estrada is pitching himself into looking like he's a higher velocity guy than he actually is, which means maybe his changeup is getting even better, which should scare everyone. So I'm a Marco Estrada guy going forward, and not just because he was a Brewer, because I thought it was time for him to go when he left Milwaukee. So we go from there.
Evan, why don't we move into your player?
Why don't we move into my player? And it harkens back to one of my bold predictions this offseason, where I said Brett Gardner was going to be a top 30 outfielder. He's currently at 17th. Yay me. His profile against right-handed pitching has drastically changed. Prior to this year, in over almost 3,000 career plate appearances against right-handed pitching, he had a hard hit rate of 23.5% and a home run to fly ball rate that was less than 8. This year, his hard hit rate is over 37%. That home run to fly ball rate is almost 22%. The Yankees have been producing very well, and Gardner's hitting leadoff. Aaron Judge actually leads the AL in runs, scored with 35. And then Gardner is tied for second with Mike Trout and teammate Starling Castro with 31. Like, that's how good the Yankees have been. There's still some swipes in his legs. He's been, you know, producing as far in the power department. He's just been all around awesome, and I'm not seeing a drop off, and I think I would buy if he's still out there in, you know, kind of 12 team mixers, or, you know, kind of even in a deeper league, I'd be willing to pay out, because I do think he'll be productive this year.
I mean, he's available in 35% of leagues, which is pretty impressive considering that he is having a pretty good season. I mean, 5 steals and 8 home runs to 30-plus runs is nice. He's hitting .282. I don't really know what much more you can ask for from someone that, like I said, you drafted him outside the top 200. You drafted him .217 on average in ESPN. He's currently the 14th ranked outfielder in ESPN. And there's a lot of players that have been playing well for the Yankees overall. He's one of them. I don't see why it couldn't continue. So I do think that he's going to be a very good, solid source of runs. He should be able to get to at least 15 to 20 home runs if he keeps up this current pace. He could easily end up getting to 15 or so stolen bases. And if he hits close to 300, then you're getting a steal for where you drafted him. So I definitely think that you're going to want to jump on that bandwagon as soon as possible. What about you, Chuck?
Well, I'm happy for my friend Evan, but I don't really see any rhyme or reason to what's happened. You know, it's odd for a 33-year-old to spike like this. He's under contract this year and next. He's owed $23 million yet between the two seasons. So it's an oddity that you're talking about a Yankee player who's a veteran who's actually turning into a bargain instead of turning into a salary bloodbath, and which is maybe a sign of the new Yankees, and maybe they finally released and let their, you know, let their GM try and play things a little bit smarter instead of just a spend mentality. So I'm happy for Brett Gardner, because he always seemed like he was a player that was he was a gritty kind of guy who people really liked, and he had stretches of being solid followed by stretches of being horrible, and I'm expecting sort of a horrible stretch or two yet from him. But I would say that with as much as he was a draft afterthought, and there was even talks of him getting traded before the season started, you know, the last offseason, winter meetings, etc., I would say that you have to be pretty happy with what you have. The fact that he's unowned in so many leagues will tell you that I don't think there's really a true trade market out there for Brett Gardner. So I don't think you can sell high. I would just be awfully cautious. I would not a guy I would plug in and forget about. If he starts to really, really struggle, I would think about getting him out of your lineup for a week and make sure that this isn't the some of the dives that we've seen, some of the horrific months that we've seen from him in the past. So that's where I am on Brett Gardner.
Why don't we move into the last player, and that's going to be someone who I've been a fan of for the last few years, and that's going to be Lance McCullers. anyone who's listened to me talk about McCullers has known that I'm absolutely in love with this guy. I love to strike out stuff that he has, and he's on a great team in Houston. Basically, I do think that he has the ability to be the best pitcher on that staff. And I think with Dallas Keuchel going down, at least for a short period of time, I do think that Lance McCullers will get to shine and actually show how good he really can be as the top person on that staff. But right now, he's done a good job. He has a sub 1.1 whip. He's got a 2.65 ERA. What are your guys' thoughts on him going forward for the rest of the season? What about you, Evan?
Well, I think Lance McCullers has made great strides this year. I think he can put the Batman cleats back on. And it's a word we've been using this podcast. Can we call him Lance Revolution? Because he's been revolutionary in two main regards. The walks, where between 2015 and 2016, only three pitchers who threw more than 200 innings had higher walk rates than him. And they were Jorge De La Rosa, Francisco Liriano, and Tom Kohler, who are mainly afterthoughts in the walk department. And this year, his walk rate is in the best third of qualifiers, so doing a lot better in that regard. Also, his approach against righties, he's top 10 in K percentage and batting average against righties this year. So I know Chuck is going to be a lot less optimistic, little rain cloud Anderson over there, but I like Lance, and I'm with you, Ben.
What about you, Chuck? I know that you're not a big fan of him. You think that he's a big injury magnet. So why don't you talk a little bit about your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I mean, I would like to say that when he's been on the mound, I really like what I've seen from him this year. I mean, cutting his walk rate in half, you know, at the cost of a couple strikeouts per nine is certainly something that a pitcher of his skill set can afford to do and can be very successful while doing it. The negative things that I see about him, you know, last year he pitched 89 innings total. He's only pitched over, you know, 125 innings, you know, once in his career. I do question what kind of an innings limit you would have on him and if they're going to have to treat him with some kid gloves down the stretch if they want him to be available for the playoffs. So I think that has a tendency to hurt his value. And I'm just concerned. I want to see him pitch like a normal starter for a while. In recent years, I think his numbers were somewhat clouded by the fact that, you know, they were trying to get him out of games early, and that walk rate was adding to his pitch count, so that was getting him out of games even earlier. So there's a lot of positive, there's a huge progression with what I've seen from him on the mound so far, and I would love to see it happen, and I would love to see him, you know, look like he's going to be a viable and healthy starter for years going forward. But I'm not going to believe it until I see it. Until he goes a couple years in a row being relatively healthy, and I think he's a candidate to pitch over 170 or 180 innings. Until then, I think the hype train has been a little bit ahead of him. So, and people, I understood. I've always understood what the magnetism was to him. You know, a huge strikeout guy, you know, great ground ball numbers. I mean, just there's over and over again, you can look and fall in love with the numbers very easily. But you do have to go back and look at what the actual innings pitch has been to this point. And to this point, you know, like Chris Devensky is a guy that could outdo his career total in major league innings this year quite easily. And so I just want to see him do it. That's all. I mean, I'm not as negative on him as you think. I would love to see him. We need more good pitching in fantasy baseball. And so this is a guy, I want him to prove me wrong. I want him to be healthy for most of the next 4 or 5 years and actually give us some guys to draft, you know, add to the bulk of pitching that we can actually draft and get some good things out of.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of him, like I was saying. I mean, he's 23. He already has a K rate of over 27% on the season, a walk rate under 7. His BABIP is right on par with what league average is, and that's 285. his FIP is just slightly over where his ERA is, so I feel like that's something he's able to keep up, and his xFIP is right on par with where his ERA is. I think that he's the type of player that, as long as he's able to stay healthy, like we've talked about, he's able to potentially be a top 20 overall starting pitcher, if not even a little bit better, because of the K rate, because of the team that he has. The defense behind him will help him overall, and because he does have a 60-plus percent ground ball rate this year, that infield is a very good defensive infield. And as of right now, as long as he keeps getting those ground balls, it's going to help him with his BABIP. It will bring it lower. It will help keep his ERA down. And considering that right now he doesn't give up a ton of home runs, but he gives up 19% of home runs per fly ball, I do think that if he does improve on that number, then we're going to be looking at, like I said, a top 20 overall starting pitcher. So, do you guys have anything else to add on anything that we've talked about today? What about you, John?
I don't have anything to add. Just going to make mention again of my Of Note article, which will be out tomorrow or early on Wednesday. And thank everyone for the continued support for FWFB, because it's been a great run, and we're going to do our part here to keep getting things better and keep getting us bigger, which I enjoy a lot. So,
you can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter, correct, Chuck?
That is correct, and interaction has certainly been on the upswing, and I will certainly try to get to any questions or take any comments, positive or negative, and gladly respond and play along. I'm good like that.
And what about you, Evan?
If you want to check me out, most likely on here is the best place. I have this love-hate relationship with Twitter. I don't know what it is. Do I have any other thoughts about anything we've talked about? No, other than I was dead serious. Welcome to manhood, man. It was a great doing your first show with you as a brand new man. Did it feel any different?
I'm 27.
Well,
but I appreciate that. It felt different. I felt older. My back feels stiff. I feel the weight of the world on my back almost.
You graduated from mac and cheese to ravioli. Like, yeah, exactly. You are a man.
Did you say where you could be reached on Twitter, Evan, or no?
FWFB. Shoot me some topics. Hang out. I don't know. I haven't tweeted in like a week. It's been a while. Leave us a review. That'd be better than hit me up on Twitter.
Yes, as Evan was saying, it's always great to have our listeners give us a rate and review. We always very much appreciate it. I can be reached at bbrancefwfb. I currently am just hosting this podcast. During the summer, we will be doing the occasional Friends with Fantasy Benefits basketball podcast. Eric Mackey joins me on there. We will be doing some draft coverage and some off-season podcasts. And I will be doing the occasional written article for FWFB. But from the rest of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball season, everyone.